Krishna has explained three types. So, Prabhupada goes at great length to explain that they are worshippers of the Absolute. Their position generally is not very good. The best of them is the Vishvatomukam, which we will hear about next. Second best is Pritakdvena, those who imagine something as supreme that is not supreme and worship it as the absolute. Those are basically the worshippers of the demigods. And the Ekatvena, those who worship themselves as equal with the absolute. These Mayavadis, they have been condemned. Avajananti mam mudha manushyam tanamashvita parambhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshvanam. They do not know. They are mudhas. They don't know Krishna's actual position. They think that he has assumed that personality and that actually he was formless and then he assumed the form and then later he will become formless again. So this certifies them as mudhas, this attitude. And as a result of their mudhaness, they get nothing. Mogasya moga kamano moga jnana vachetasa. They get no jnana, they get no knowledge, their hopes are baffled, and their hopes for karma, fruit of results, they are smashed and crashed into ground into dust. Why? Rakshashim asurim chaiva prakriti mohanim shrita. Because they gradually develop this asuric rakshasa view to remove Krishna, move him out of the way, so that they can become one with God. And this brings them to the point of asuraism and rakshasism. And this comes about because prakriti mohanim shrita, they have taken shelter of the material energy. They have not taken shelter of the internal energy, like the Mahatmas. So Krishna will now explain the best of the worst. These aren't actually all the worst, but this is Visvatomukam coming up right now. Those who worship the universe, they cannot see anything beyond matter. So they see that everything material, practically a type of pantheism, where they see that everything material is all that is. But Krishna will attempt to teach them that he is the essence and the attractive feature of every material item that has potency. So rather than worshipping the universal form Vishvatom Mukam, or rather than worshipping pantheistically anything as God, rather they should worship Krishna. So Krishna will explain that here. But it is I who am the ritual. So you are doing a sacrifice. That sacrifice comes from the Vedas, which comes from my breathing. This has already been explained in the fourth chapter. So I am the ritual. Because it is coming from my breathing, Krishna says it is none different from me. I am the sacrificing. I am the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant, the mantra that is in the Vedas. This is all me. You are worshipping through this process of jaga, but it is me. I descend and give potency into the practice. I am the butter, the fire, and the offering. Krishna has already explained this, how the absolute nature of these Vedic sacrifices. And here he's explaining it again, so that these the Vishvamukams, Vishvatomukam, so they can perceive it is Krishna that is giving the potency into these things. It is Krishna, the person, who descends with his potency, and therefore the potency is there. Pitamaham asya jagato. Pitamaham, I am the father. Krishna will explain this in chapter 15. Aham bijapada pita. that I am Savayono Shukanteya Murtaya Sambhavatiya Tasyam Brahma Mahayoniya Aham Bilavada Pita. That in the material nature I inject the living entities. And this material nature is Yoni, Savayonishu. It is Prakriti, and in this material nature I inject the living entities, so therefore I am the Father. So I am that Father. This womb of the material world is the mother, and I am the Father. So the life planted within this world is due to me. I am the Father of this universe. Pitaham Masya Jagato. Mata. I am the Mother. Not only is Krishna the Father, He is the Mother. So sometimes people will worship the material energy in Devi, Ma, Durga, Kali, Vajrakali, Bhairav. So many different forms of worship of the mother, the material energy. But that is actually Krishna because He's empowering it and it's His material energy. Nature. People like nature, but whose nature is it? Just like we will say that Sankirtan has a nice nature. So He is the possessor of the nature. So whose nature do people appreciate? Whose qualities are they appreciating? It's Krishna's. He's already explained this in the 7th chapter, in the 9th chapter, that He is this material energy. He's expanded Himself through it. In His unmanifested form, avyaktamurti. So it is Him, Bina Prakritamastaram. It is Krishna, Krishna. So He's trying to teach in the Ekatvena people, He's just chastised them and called them mudas. But these people are better, so He's teaching them that you should see Me in this. Don't be satisfied just by seeing nature. You should see Me. Vedyam Pavitram Onkara. I am the object of knowledge. Krishna will explain this also in the 13th chapter. He is Jnanam Gyam. He is knowledge and the object of knowledge. And that is as the Supersoul. Purusha. He is the Dehesmin Purusha Para. This is the object of knowledge. It is Krishna. Within the body, there is the Purusha, the Paramatma. Pavitram. He is that which purifies. Purifies means brings one closer to Krishna, and Krishna empowers. He descends into this world as the different purifying forces. And He is the syllable Om. So Krishna is Om. Om is not impersonal, it is personal. Krishna is actually that Om, just like there is Brahma Jyoti. Krishna is Parabrahman, that the Jyoti, the effulgence comes from. He is the Supreme Brahman. I am also the Rig, the Sama, and the Yajur Vedas. So these points have been explained already, and they will be explained further. I am the goal. Vedas Chasavar Aham Eva Vidyo. I am the goal of the Vedas. The sustainer. If someone maintains this, Bharta Bhokta Maheshwaram, Krishna will say, in what chapter? 13. He will say, I am the Bharta. No, 15. Yes?
Well, that's 13.
13, right. And then in 15 he says that I am Bharta also. Right. And in 15 there's quite a lot on him being the maintainer. So someone is maintaining us, feeding us, giving us sustenance, giving us strength, giving us life, giving us the breath, giving us the fire of digestion, giving us the vegetables, making the vegetables tasty, the water available. If Krishna, just now, through a little bit of His potency, the air is very heavy, so we have a hard time breathing, or it's difficult to breathe without the fan. So imagine if Krishna withdrew all the air, how difficult it would be, but He is maintaining everyone. How glorious. He is the Bharta. He is the Prabhu. He is the Master. He is the Shakshi, the witness. Bharta Bhokta. He is Anumanta. That will also be explained in the 13th chapter. That he is the witness. Savasya chaham riddhe sanavisto. He is in everyone's heart, witnessing everything silently. He knows everything that is happening. If we do something bad, he will watch us and he will catch us. But if we do something good, or even think something good in Kali Yuga, this is one of the glories of Kali Yuga. In previous ages, to get the good result, you would have to do something good. But in Kali Yuga, all we have to do is think of something good and the result will come. While this is on our mind, everyone should take a few seconds now and think of doing something very good. Think of doing the best possible thing you can do. You will, yes? 15 seconds and we will get some result. He is the refuge, the shelter, and the most dear friend. Keep going, we'll have questions later. The most dear friend, because he is within the heart and he is accompanying, and when we turn to him, he will help us so much. When I first became a devotee, it was a common saying that we don't hear so much anymore, that if we take one step to Krishna, he will take so many steps to us. He will reciprocate with that. So such a dear friend. He is the basis of everything. He is the basic principle. Everything is resting on him. We have heard this earlier. Matstani Savabhutani. The resting place. Everything is dependent and resting upon his energy and the eternal seed. The soul itself is Jiva Shakti. Kshetragya Kya Tathapara. It is also the superior energy. 19. O Arjuna, I give heat. And I withhold and send forth the rain. So now it is raining in Vrindavan. But if you go past Koshi nowadays, it is not raining. Every day it rains in Vrindavan. But past Koshi it is not raining. In Faridabad it is not raining. In Delhi it is not raining. But Krishna is sending the rain to Braja now. Right. But sometimes enough is... A little more is okay. Yes. He also withholds the rain too, if he desires. I am immortality, and I am also death personified. So we say commonly that even the materialist who doesn't want to acknowledge the existence of God must acknowledge him when he comes as death. He cannot say, no, go away, I don't want to have anything to do with you. I bring forth the electricity, which brings the fan. Both spirit and matter are in me. Krishna has already said that. In what chapter?
Seven.
What chapter has Krishna said both spirit and matter are in me?
What
chapter has Krishna said both spirit and matter are in him? All those who think the seventh are correct. The first two. Huh? Second what?
First.
Oh. It's later. It's right. It's somewhere around 12 or 13. 14 is deviation. Anyway, you can look later. Those who, Prabhupada says in the purport, since Krishna is both matter and spirit, the gigantic universal form comprising all material manifestations is also Krishna. And his pastimes in Vrindavan as two-handed Shyama Sundar playing on a flute are those of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You cannot approach the universal form with affection. So it is an inferior aspect of Krishna. Now, so that ends. That ends the section on Vishvato Mukam, the universal form. Again, Krishna is showing those who worship the universal form that they should take the next step and understand Him. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, or in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, it is explained that this universal form is actually imaginary. It is for the gross materialists who cannot see anything beyond matter, that they should at least see that Krishna, or that there is some, that they should see, come closer to seeing a spiritual being within that matter. Now, after explaining about Vishvatomukam, Krishna will explain about Pritaktvena, which means those who worship the demigods as if they were absolute. So Krishna has given the instruction to the Ekatvenawalas that they are fools and rascals. Naturally, that means they should give up their beliefs. He's given instructions to the Vishvatomukamwalas that they should go further in their understanding and understand that Krishna is the source of that universal form. And now he shall instruct the Pritaktvenas, those who are worshipping the demigods as if they were supreme. So first he will explain the results accruing to one who worships the demigods. Those who study the Vedas and drink the soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. So in each aspect of these three, Krishna has explained that they are all worshipping Him, that He is that absolute, the absolute truth that they are worshipping. But these people don't know it. So they worship Krishna indirectly, purified of sinful reactions. They take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. So although they are worshipping Krishna, they are worshipping through the demigods, and they will attain, and if someone worships Krishna through the demigods, thinking that the demigods are part of Krishna's universal existence, then they will attain Krishna. But these people aren't doing that. They are worshipping the demigods as independent gods, as the goal in themselves. And when they are purified, the result will be that they will attain the heavenly kingdom. They will not attain Krishna. So what happens to these people who are worshipping the demigods in this improper, incomplete consciousness, not connecting the demigods as being empowered suradevas, devatas, as empowered servants of Krishna, but they're worshipping the demigods as ends in themselves. What happens to them? When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. So this has already been explained in the end of the 8th chapter also, that these are the people who go in darkness, they again come back. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. So is that a great achievement? Mrityu samsara vatmani. This has already been explained also. This is their achievement, birth and death. They are working so hard to worship the demigods, and this is what they get. Now Krishna will contrast the worship of the demigods with his worship. Now why do the worshippers of the demigods worship the demigods? Because they want rain, they want some sense enjoyment, they want to be maintained by the demigods, they want so many things from the demigods, and for this they work very hard. Now Krishna will explain about the devotees in one verse, the devotees rendering pure devotional service, and how they get their needs met. How are they maintained? The demigod worshippers are maintained by the demigods, but how are the devotees maintained? One could say, okay, the demigod worshippers get, they achieve the heavenly planets for some time and then they come down, but they're worshipping the demigods, so at least they'll be maintained. Because of their worship, they'll be maintained. Well, but how will the devotees be maintained? So Krishna explains, Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana pariupasate tesham nitya abhyuktonam yogacchemam vahamyaham. So Ananyas means we undeviatingly. So in the 8th chapter, and this is and also in this 9th chapter, this Ananya Bhakti is being described. Those who undeviatingly, with no other object in their consciousness, who just worship and surrender to Krishna as the object of their affection. Ananyas, chinta, ayanto mam. So chinta means their mind, and chintayanto means, mam means concentrating their mind on me. Ananyas chintayanto mam. They, without any other object entering their consciousness, they just concentrate their minds upon Krishna. Yejana pariupasate. So these persons who properly worship me, not those persons that we just heard about, the demigod worshippers, the impersonalists, and the worshippers of the universal form that are worshipping Krishna because nothing is separate from Krishna. And the Brahmanohi Patishtaham, the Brahman effulgence is resting on Krishna. The universal form is resting on Krishna. The demigods are dependent on Krishna and their powers rest on Krishna. But those people worship the demigods, the impersonal and the universal form, worship Krishna incorrectly because they are worshipping incomplete with incomplete knowledge about these aspects. But these people, Amyejana pariupasate, ananya chintayantumam, whose consciousness is just focused on Krishna in affectionate love, these people who worship me correctly, what happens to them? Tesham, for them, nitya, abhyukto mam, abhyukto nam, who are fixed in devotion, yoga chemam vahamyaham. All their requirements, chemam, I protect, and vahami yaham, I carry for them. I carry what they lack, I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. What someone lacks, Krishna will make that up. And what someone has, Krishna will maintain. Prabhupada explains in the purport. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. This is the nine aspects or qualities of devotional service that Prahlad Maharaj mentions to his demonic father, Haranyakashipu. That these qualities are simply the activities of a devotee who is fixed in this. And Krishna reciprocates with the mood of these devotees. There's a nice verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita that in the teachings to Sanatan Goswami, Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye Sarupa Purnata. This means that Krishna possesses Aishwarya. What does Aishwarya mean? Opulence. What opulence? He is given a hint of his yogam Aishwaryam, his mystic yogic opulence is how he's supporting everything. And in the 10th chapter, he will explain more of his opulence. So Krishna has unlimited opulence. Aishwarya Madhurya. What is Madhurya? Sweetness. So Krishna has unlimited sweetness, and unlimited devotees are attracted to him because of his sweetness, his sweet dealings, his sweet bodily features, the sweet way he plays his flute. Everything about Krishna is sweet. And Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye. What is Karuna? Mercy. So Krishna is so merciful. He is Dinabandhu. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu. Dinabandhu Jagatpate. Gopesha Gopika Kanta. Radha Kanta Namostute. So he is Karuna Sindhu. He is an ocean of mercy. If we take a step to him, he will take so many steps to us. And Krishna possesses these opulences, Aishwarya Madhurya Karune Swarupa Ponata, complete and complete perfection. They are natural to him. They are part of him and he possesses them completely. But Bhakti Vatsalya, but this quality, that he leans towards his devotee, that he favors his devotee, Atma Parjanta Vadanyata. That he even, this is his most glorious quality, that he will even give himself to his devotees. So this quality of Krishna being bhakti, bhakta vatsal, is and rasika shekha, these are the most glorious qualities of Krishna. Krishna will even give himself to his devotee. Like he's giving himself to Arjuna. He's driving his chariot. He's protecting Arjuna. There's one story from the Mahabharata where at the end of the battle, Krishna tells Arjuna, says, you get off the chariot first. And this is actually improper etiquette because always the chariot driver gets off first. Because the hero, the warrior, he is the last to descend from the chariot. But Krishna said to Arjuna, you get off first. So Arjuna said, why? You should act properly if you're acting as my chariot driver. You get off first. No, you just do it. So Arjuna said, alright, he got off first. And then Krishna got off. And the chariot immediately burst into flames. And Arjuna could understand that Krishna had absorbed all the weapons and all the firepower that was shot at Arjuna during the battle, and Arjuna was thus protected. But it was being protected because Krishna was on the chariot. It was Krishna that was protecting him. Yoga Chemam Vahamyam. Krishna personally protects his devotees. Chema means protection. So I protect them. Yoga Chemam, I protect them. And vahamyaham, I carry what they lack. I personally bring them what they lack. And I maintain what they have. I protect them. Prabhupada, I heard, tell one very famous story about one Arjuna Charja, who was a very great scholar, but was poor. He was a brahmana, so he was poor. So he knew the Bhagavad Gita, and he was a devotee of Krishna. But when he read how this verse, as he was writing his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, Yoga Kshemam Vahamyaham, he says, yes, Krishna protects his devotee. Who can protect his devotee? But Vahamyaham, that Krishna carries what the devotee needs, Krishna himself carries it, no, Krishna is God. He's already explained in the 9th chapter earlier that he is very aloof. He stays in the spiritual world. Matstani, Sarvabhutani, everything is in him, but he is completely aloof. So Krishna doesn't carry himself, Vamyaham. And he took out his pen. He wrote in, Karamyaham. I have done. I have it. Done for him. And so not yoga chemam vahamyaham, yoga chemam karamyaham, not a very big difference. Instead of Krishna doing it, he's saved Krishna some trouble. Why should Krishna do that? He has so much to do. I have done, he put in there. So then he went out after some time to beg for some food. And after a little while, the wife hears on the door. And she opens the door, she's wondering, who is that trying so hard to get in? And she opens the door and two boys are at the door. And they come in a little way, but don't go in any further. And they're having one, they're carrying stick like this with big baskets on each end. And there's in these baskets, there's fruit, there's vegetable, there's ghee. And they're poor. And she says, "My boys, you look so excited. Come in, come in." "No, no, 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 no. We don't want to come in. Here, you just please take these vegetables, take these fruits. Please, just calm down. Just come in and sit for a few minutes." "No, no, we're not coming in." "Why are you bringing this to me? Your husband, he has forced us. He has forced us to bring this food to you." "My husband? Such a gentle brahmana? He has forced you?" "Yes, please come in." "No, no, no. We're afraid of him. He beat me before. Look." And he showed his back. He's such a beautiful boy too, with beautiful curling hair and darkish complexion. He showed his, took off his pitambar, showed his back, and there were big marks on his back. "Please, I will take care of those wounds." "No, no, we want to go immediately before your husband comes back and chastises us and beats us further. We are going, we are going. But boys, come back." They ran out. Wife couldn't understand. Beautiful, beautiful boys bringing such wonderful food. My husband beat them. How is that possible? Anyway, she thought, she started cooking for her husband. She was a good Vedic wife. But then she was waiting some time. Her husband wasn't back yet. And she began eating before her husband came back. She's wondering how, why he has done this? Why has he done this? So then Arjunacharya comes back in and he sees his wife eating, which is completely against the Vedic system. The wife will never eat before the husband. She will cook for the husband, she will serve the husband, and then after the husband is finished, she will eat. But she was eating. And he looked and said, "Devi, you're eating before me? What is this?" And she immediately stood up and said, "Acharya, you have become so cruel." She was very upset. She said, you have beaten the boys. They brought so much food. You've beaten them and I've seen the marks on the back. What has come into you?" He said, "What? I've beaten the boys? Let me see what they brought." And he saw all the food they brought. "I've beaten them? I have not beaten anyone. What did these boys look like?" "Oh, one was very darkish complexion with a peacock feather on his head. So beautiful. And when he came in, there was the room so effulgent. And the other boy also, but wearing blue cloth, but a light complexion. And he thought, and he thought, and he understood. He asked her, "The boys had some marks on their back?" "Yes, the dark boy," she said, "had some scratch marks on his back." And then he could understand that when he had said, "Vahamyaham," or "Karamyaham," that "I do not do myself," he had crossed out. And those scratching marks that came on Krishna's back as beating marks, because he had forced Krishna to himself come to bring what he lacked. Vaham yaham. To show him that I myself will carry it. Not through the demigods. Not through Maya. But myself I will do this. And Arjunacharya immediately understood. So this faith of the devotees allows them to practice this ananya bhakti, ananya ananya chintayanto mam, to always focus on Krishna. Because Krishna will always protect his devotee. And it doesn't even have to be the most exalted of prema bhaktas either. And every devotee who preaches knows how Krishna will protect him. There are some verses in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that are very sweet in this connection. One is The demigods place many obstacles on the path of those who worship you, O Krishna, to transcend the temporary abodes of the demigods and reach your supreme abode. Those who offer the demigods their assigned shares in sacrificial performances encounter no such obstacles. But because you are the direct protector of your devotee, he is able to step over the head of whatever obstacles the demigods place before him. The demigods here state, "We thought, our dear Lord, that we could disturb your consciousness by our foolish tricks." The demigods here point out that Krishna is directly the protector of his devotees. Therefore, so-called impediments become stimuli for further spiritual advancement for a sincere devotee. The demigods state, "We thought, our dear Lord, that we could disturb your consciousness by our foolish tricks. But by your mercy, even your devotees, pay little regard to us. So why should you take our foolish behavior seriously?" The word yadi here is used to indicate the certainty that Krishna is always the protector of his surrendered devotees. Although there may be many obstacles on the path of the sincere devotee who is preaching the glories of the Lord, such obstacles increase the determination of the devotee. Therefore, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, the continuous obstacles presented by the demigods form a kind of ladder or a stairway upon which the devotee steadily progresses back to the kingdom of God. A similar verse is in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 2nd chapter. Who knows which chapter the 2nd chapter is? What is the name of the 10th canto, 2nd chapter? Yeah, or Garbha Stuti, prayers by the demigods to the womb. O Madhava, Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, if devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall from the path of devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. Thus they fearlessly traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in devotional service. And here is one of my favorite verses. O King, one who accepts the process of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead will never blunder on his path in this world. Even while running with eyes closed, he will never trip or fall. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has concluded on this verse, in his comment on this verse, "In all dharmas other than Bhagavad Dharma, one must consider the conditioned soul's qualification. But a soul surrendered to the Lord is never confounded by error, even if unqualified in all other respects, even if he has no other qualification other than the fact that he has surrendered actually, sincerely, completely unto Krishna, even if he has no other good qualification, he will never have any difficulty. His feet never stumble. He never falls. Even though wandering in the world at whim, he always resides in an auspicious place by the influence of his unswerving worship. The unique potency of Bhagavad Dharma, or Krishna consciousness, does not appear in any of the other dharmas of the world. There is no comparison between a surrendered individual who has taken shelter of Bhagavad Dharma and the practitioners of any other dharma." Narottama Das Thakur, in the last song of his Pratana, says, I'll only read the English, "Soon all the residents of Vrindavan will float in the nectar of pure love for Radha and Krishna. Sri Krishna is like a dark cloud that showers the nectar of pure love, and Srimati Radharani is like a restless lightning flash sitting in the lap of that cloud. The path of love for Krishna is winding and crooked. It is slippery and filled with mud mixed with kunkum, sandalwood paste, and musk. The great ocean of love of Krishna stretches without limit in all directions. Although Narottama Das does not know how to swim across the ocean, that ocean, he plunges headfirst into it. You like that, Nandan? You should also plunge. And amazingly enough, there are so many examples of the devotees of the Lord in distress. So one can say, look at the Pandavas, they were the greatest devotees. They were fully protected by Krishna, yet they had so much difficulty. So how can it be that we can say, yoga chemam, that Krishna always protects his devotees? The Pandavas were in so much distress that Bhishma, who was such a powerful, unsentimental fellow, was crying when he thought of how difficult the Pandavas situation was. But we see, actually, that Krishna protected the Pandavas so carefully. When Durvasa Muni came to them on Duryodhana's instigation, Duryodhana sent Durvasa Muni to go to the Pandavas just after Draupadi had eaten, so Draupadi and the Pandavas would not be able to provide any food to Durvasa, because the pot, once Draupadi had taken her food, it would not provide any more food, even though it was such a wonderful pot. And this way Duryodhana wanted to have the Pandavas cursed by Durvasa Muni and finished in that way, because Durvasa Muni gets very hot. Is a hot temperament. So when Draupadi understood, they were in the forest, and when Draupadi understood that Durvasa had come and wanted food, and that she had eaten, she was in complete anxiety. And she called out to Krishna, "Krishna, Krishna, help." And Krishna was in Dwarka, and immediately he came, saying, "I am so hungry, but we have this problem. But I'm so hungry, give me something to eat." But that's just our problem. There's no food for anyone. And Durvasa said, "I'm so hungry, give me something to eat," Krishna said. "Where is the pot?" "But there's no food in the pot. Anything, give me anything. One tiny grain of rice, anything." So they looked in the pot and found on the side, on the outside, one little vegetable piece. And Krishna ate that and said, "Ah, I feel satisfied now. In fact, I feel very full now." And thereby, when he felt full, the whole universe began to feel, "Oh, I just had a big feast. Too much oil. I cannot eat for some time." And then Durvasa ran. And why did Durvasa run? Because he had already experienced with Ambarish Maharaj, and he had so much trouble being chased by the Sudarshan Chakra all over the universe. So he didn't want to get into trouble with Maharaj Yudhisthira now. You know, refuse his hospitality, so he ran. So Krishna protected every time the distress is caused by Krishna to show yoga chemam vaham yaham. And one distress after another, the residents of Vrindavan surrendered to Krishna, and Indra was so angry and he poured down torrents of rain, and Krishna lifted up Govardhan Hill. And there was such nice arrangements under Govardhan Hill too. And there was even a nice jeweled platform for Krishna to stand on so he can hold the hill so the residents of Vrindavan can see him better, because after all, Krishna was just a boy, so he was smaller than the residents of Vrindavan. So it would have been very inconvenient if he was just this big and holding the hill, and the residents of Vrindavan were so much taller they'd have to hunch down. So there was a nice platform with jewels so everyone could just stare at Krishna. Protected, the Sudarshan Chakra protected, Ambarish Maharaj was protected. The residents of Vrindavan were continuously protected. And the Pandavas, their seemingly difficulties were actually just simply ecstasy for them. Because they were just simply ananyas. Chintayanto mam, ananya cheta satatam yomam smarati nityasa. They were just simply thinking of Krishna. So much so that after the Pandavas, after the battle of Kurukshetra, and they were no longer in exile, and now they were the kings. The Yudhisthira was the king. The king can get anything he wants. There were no enemies. The Kauravas
were finished. There were no enemies, no troubles, no difficulty. Armies would come. Thousands of people would come with food. Whatever they want, they could have. What did Kunti Devi pray when Krishna was leaving that time? She prayed, Vipada Shantu Tashvasva Tatra Tatra. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated birth and death. Prabhupada explains in the purport. For a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing the bottom up. Thank you. Means preparing for liberation from birth and death. Therefore, even though there are so-called calamities, they are welcome because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation. In other words, these difficult times that we all experience one time or another, they are just Krishna very kindly bringing us closer to Him. This material world is certified by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place, full of calamities. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust to those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. The duty of the sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization, because that is the mission of human life. So here the instruction is that we should always do what is best for our Krishna consciousness, not do what is best for maintaining our material situation. We should simply increase our Krishna consciousness and make becoming closer to Krishna's lotus feet, taking step after step closer to Krishna, making that the purpose of our life. There is no other mission of human life. With full faith, knowing that Krishna will protect, Krishna must protect. It is His promise. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta prinashati. This will be explained later, practically in even stronger terms. Krishna will have Arjuna say that you declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. In the same way, all calamities in life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any one of the 9 devotional services is always a forward step on the path of going back to Godhead. So, are there any questions, comments? Tatravit, you had a question before? So someone can say that what kind of a devotee is this that may Krishna carry these things and provide for them? What kind of devotee will make Krishna serve him? Because the devotee wants to serve Krishna. And we preach against religionists who make God their order supplier. So Krishna says, they have not given me this burden. This was from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura. I do these things, yoga chemam baham yaham. I do this by my own sweet will. It is not a burden. I can create universes. So this is not a burden for me. For I have a feeling of personal desire. So there is no burden. Krishna gets pleasure out of serving His devotees. Bhakti vatsalya atma parjanta vedanyata. So one can also say that the demigod worshippers also worship Krishna, because Krishna has already explained that they are worshipping me, actually, the demigod worshippers. So why doesn't Krishna treat the demigod worshippers like this? Why do they get different results? And the answer is, will be explained in the next. Here's some nice comments. This pariyapasate means they properly worship. So this also means that they take shelter of me and worship me. This is proper worship. They take shelter of me and worship me and my nectarian wonderful pastimes and opulences. They're always thinking about Krishna's pastimes and opulences. So Krishna says that they are so fixed in undeviated consciousness on me that they forget to take care of themselves, so I do it. So we should become this kind of a devotee and know that there will never be any lack. Okay, so tomorrow we have a momentous task to finish this chapter. This is such a glorious chapter.
Just to verify, these three people, these Deepak Jain, etc., it seems, are they somewhere in the middle between the Namandi speaking of Mudhas and the Chaturvidha Vedantins?
No, they're... The Namam Diskritinos actually have knowledge, but they reject their knowledge for one reason or another. Either lack of faith, or they have, or they're too attached to the fruit of their work, or their knowledge has been bewildered by Maya, too much learning, or like Jarasandha worshipping Vishnu, but being an asura and trying to kill Krishna. So asura bhav. So they have knowledge. These people have wrong knowledge. They don't. It's incomplete knowledge. In the seventh chapter, they are called either Ritigyan or Abhudaya, either little knowledge or no knowledge. So their category is different. It seems like the Ekatvaina, they're called Mudhas. So also Avajana, also Namam Dushpitino Mudha. So they seem, the impersonalist is practically like the foolish fruit of worker. Both Mudhas classified as Mudhas by Krishna. So this is like a different category. They surrender, but not to Krishna. The other people don't surrender at all. So the Vishvato Mukams, with this added knowledge, just completing their knowledge, they'll worship Krishna. The demigod worshippers, when they understand the era, they'll worship Krishna. But the Mayavadis, very difficult to make them understand. They are too tricky at word jugglery. Okay, all glories to Prabhupada. So tomorrow, we will finish. Somehow or another, we will finish by Krishna's mercy.